That's I Can Do It With a Broken Heart by Taylor Swift off her latest album, The Tortured Poets Department, the latest addition to her library of albums. I like this one. This song specifically is about her ability to keep going on this tour and be the world's kind of most popular entertainer at any given moment while still going through, you know, personal things at home. She's exhausted. She's tired. She's breaking up with people, breaking up with a boyfriend. But here's the message. Joining me on the line right now is Julia Delois. Julia is the creative director of Raising Hell Events, the city's number one producer of Taylor Swift-related events. Julia, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Ian.
I understand that you got a last-minute ticket on Friday night. Tell us about the show.
I did. I was lucky enough to get the last-minute ticket. I was just kind of watching those ticket prices like a lot of other people, and a friend kind of pulled the trigger for me, for both of us, in a way that I might not have pulled the trigger for myself, but it was a magical show. So can't complain. Loved every moment. It was totally dazzling.
I am not going to ask you what you spent on it, but I know it was probably a significant amount of money. But, you know, you and I know that last time we spoke, I think, was that just last fall? Yeah, it was right when Taylor Swift was the, what do you call it, the Time Magazine Person of the Year.
Yeah, December or so.
Yeah, you had already, seen the Eras Tour twice before, but you had to go see it a third time. You're a super fan.
Well, you know, it's almost 2 years later. This woman is insane. And like you said, she's just added an album just a few months ago. So there was a whole new section of the tour that I hadn't seen before. And yeah, very, very lucky to get to go so many times. And it was really fascinating to go a few times so far apart, because the times that I went were really close to the beginning of the tour.
And tell us a little bit about what you did as creative director of Raising Hell Events for the Swifties that were all in town over the weekend. What was your task here?
Sure. So a lot of this year, kind of since the beginning of the year, I definitely spent a lot of time kind of doing like some low impact consulting for a bunch of businesses that were looking to do tailor programming and getting their ducks in a row early. And then this weekend, I was really on the ground, most of the weekend at House of Blues. So they had a whole weekend of programming there with the Eras Tour Museum, with their photo album, the photo op setup, and the marketplace where all these little vendors are, you know, you can go get glammed up and browse the vendors. We did a comedy roast. We did a drag burlesque brunch. So it was a poppin' weekend over at House of Blues.
Wow. Okay. So, and you have seen now the sort of change, demographically speaking, about who's going to these Taylor Swift events. Tell us about your observations there.
Yeah. So, I mean, the one thing I really could not stop observing and thinking about this weekend, it's really still sticking with me. I really saw a narrative arc for the men of the Eras Tour between like the beginning of the tour and what I saw around town this weekend. How to explain that? I think it used to be that there was more of like a singular or prescribed way in the beginning for men to like sort of interact with the Eras Tour or interact with this space, this fandom. And I was just kind of endlessly delighted all weekend long by the wider variety of the type of men I saw going. They didn't look like they were like boyfriends being reluctantly dragged. Mm-hmm. There were dads, you know, just it's so good natured. There were a lot more ways to interact with the Eras Tour world. And that made me think that perhaps that is, that points to some more authenticity maybe, and just kind of like doing so with more levity, without kind of like needing to dump all over it at the same time,
yeah.
I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. I saw a lot of guys walking around wearing t-shirts. And it didn't seem like they had been like their wives and daughters did not hold them down and force them to wear those t-shirts. You know, I think they wanted to be a part of it. I think that there would have to been just the worst FOMO. The worst fear of missing out. You know, if you're here with your family or your friends, and even if you're not a huge Taylor Swift fan, like fake it so that you can at least enjoy
fake
the vibe.
Until you make it.
Exactly.
So I did. Exactly.
Yeah, that's
you can do it with a broken heart too. Yeah.
You can do it with a broken heart, Dad.
You can do it with a busted wallet. Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, the t-shirts they're wearing, they're like the cute t-shirts that are like, it's me. Hi, I'm the dad. It's me. That's very charming.
Yeah.
They have the like spending a lot of money at the moment. I think that's very funny. But then also, you know, they're also like wearing shirts, just like, you know, this is like the Speak Now album shirt, straight up, you know, like,
yeah.
It seemed to be a little bit less like ironic and just a little more like taking part. It felt like they were just like really willing to kind of come into the space and have some fun and be medium or low level fans and just have fun with it.
Okay, great. So we know about the events that you had at House of Blues. There was stuff all over this city. A lot of people, I'm sure, got a chance to visit it or at least see what was going on in there. But I want to know a little bit about, for people who weren't there, can you kind of just describe the atmosphere of the concert inside the Superdome? I mean, I have seen so many, you know, clips on Instagram and TikTok of people just going nuts in there. I can only imagine, like, I've seen concerts, I've been to exciting football games, and it's hard for me to imagine that any of the exciting, you know, concert events or sport events that I've ever been to could hold a candle to the sort of level of electric energy that there is at this Taylor Swift concert. Tell us about that.
Yeah, everyone is just giddy. Like, it really does feel... it feels culty. I'll just say it feels culty. Sure. And a lot of people will tell me, like, I'm kind of, you know, I'm diehard. I really am diehard. But a lot of people have said, like, you're both the craziest Swiftie I know and also the chillest Swiftie I know. And I think that's because I'm, like, willing to speak with a little bit of self-awareness about just how nuts it is. But it feels crazy in there. Like, everyone is just, like, walking around giddy. Like, you can't stop looking at each other. Everyone is the most, like, beautiful, cutest, prettiest, adorable girl you've ever seen in your life. They've got the outfits. Everyone is just so happy. They're being kind to each other. There's no, like... I don't know. There's no rowdiness or animosity. Everyone is just like, it's like we're all, it's like we're all there together. Like, we're all seeing the show together. Yeah, it's wild. It really is so silly and crazy.
I had a friend that I was hanging out with on Saturday morning, and he was asking me, you know, what do you think the appeal is here? And I said, brother, imagine that your favorite band is everybody's favorite band. Like, your favorite band right now is also the band that's on top of the world. The type of band that can command, you know, $1,200, $1,300, $1,500 tickets. Not that that's Taylor Swift's fault that the tickets are that much, but you take my point. And imagine then that, you know, all of you get together and all of you know every single word to every single song. And at the same time, the band has kind of gone above and beyond just doing a good performance of their songs, but they're integrating all kind of new production techniques and technology to really bring people together and make this event bigger than the sum of its parts. And I said all that to my friend, and he said, yeah, that sounds okay. I think I get it now. Do you think I kind of nailed it there? Is that right?
100%. And on top of that, I would just add, like, also imagine that was like maybe your favorite band or artist when you were as young as 15 or 16 years old. Think about like those formative artists to you when you were growing up, discovering music, being a young person, you know, identifying with an artist's writing. And imagine that artist is not only like still around, still in the game today, but like has risen to the top. Right. So yeah. And I that's something I really appreciate and like find valuable about being such a fangirl of this massively mainstream thing, not just because like, you know, everyone else is a Swiftie necessarily, but I really find it valuable. Like, it's a bridge to conversation with absolutely anyone that I come into contact with. And I really enjoy talking to people. I consider myself a pretty flexible conversationalist. So if I meet someone who like doesn't, you know, someone who's not the hugest fan, like, they have something to say about Taylor Swift, right? Like, they, you know, then they're telling me about their niece who is a fan, or then I ask them who their favorite artist is, and they light up talking about that. So it's like, yeah, everyone has an opinion on my favorite thing, and if it doesn't agree with my opinion, I can at least use it as, like, a conversational bridge to connect with people. It's amazing.
That is amazing. And what a cool thing to be able to do, you know, to say, hey, even if you're not enthusiastic about my thing, we can use that as a jumping off point to talk about something that you're enthusiastic about. And then you know, maybe made a new friend. Julia, I want to ask you about the future of Taylor Swift concerts, because this is a thing that I found myself asking. You know, I went to go see Green Day in Dallas just a little while ago, and Green Day's concert in Dallas was a sort of retrospective where it's the 30th anniversary of Dookie. It's the 20th anniversary of American Idiot. So they're playing both of these albums cover to cover, and the sort of impact of that in terms of striking people in their feelings, like the nostalgic effect of going to listen to both of those albums performed live back to back, is what made that Green Day tour possible. I think, you know, they put out a new album, last January. And if they're only going on tour, you know, playing the new music from that new album, there is no way on God's green earth they are selling out 30 stadiums and going on this big tour. I wonder, you know, both for the future of Green Day and now for Taylor Swift. So you have these kind of like, it's in a way, Green Day did their own kind of Tiny Eras tour with just those two albums, right? Taylor Swift is hitting up, you know, all 10 or 11 albums, whatever she has. How does Taylor Swift go back to touring at this level without that sort of nostalgia factor where everybody understands she's going to play songs from the last, you know, 25 years or whatever it is, however long she's been making music? What is the future of the Taylor Swift concert if she's just touring on the power of one album?
God, that feels like the bazillion-dollar question. It's like you said, you're right. Like, nostalgia is selling right now. And for the concert industry, for tour marketing, we're seeing so much, like, so many more, like, double, triple billed. Like, you know, maybe Green Day is going to play with Blink 182 or whatever. They're stacking, like, three, four acts on the same bill. And obviously, Taylor doesn't have to do that anytime soon. And I don't know. I kind of think, at least for the foreseeable future, I think she's probably, we know that she's writing new music, actually. Again, this woman is insane. I think she's probably going to focus for a while on, well, you know, I think she might lock it down with Trav. We might see her, you know, get hitched, start a family, all that stuff. And I think alongside that, maybe we'll see her, like, lean more into writing, directing, producing for other artists. But I don't think she'll be gone from the tour industry, from the tour circuit forever. So I don't know. How will she come back to it? I don't know. I mean, she could start over. She could do anything. I don't know. I don't know. This woman keeps us guessing.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, I don't think that any artist at this stage in their career could go back to touring on the strength of just their new album, where they're here, you know, I'm going to be on stage for 2 hours, and for an hour and a half of that, I'm going to be playing new music that people aren't totally familiar with. And the other 30 minutes, I'm going to be playing like the hits. That doesn't seem like a thing that she's going to do.
I don't think so. I mean, I was just, House of Blues had Sixpence None the Richer in town the other week. And that was kind of like jogging. I was like, yeah, what are they up to now? I was looking at their tour and their discography on Spotify, and they have like, it's like this tour is like, it's called like 30 years of Sixpence None the Richer or something like that. So they're all doing these like retrospectives. You know, even these small time, it's silly.
Really interesting. Yeah, I think that the nostalgia is such a powerful thing, and as our kind of world keeps getting faster and faster, and the things that we loved about our past selves and our childhood seems to be both at once farther away, but also more important than ever. And so I think more artists are going to end up doing this just because that's what people want. They're not really totally interested in coming out to hear you perform your new music. They're coming out to feel the way they felt when they loved you when they were teenagers.
And I wonder if that's like something that maybe, you know, men or dads or something are kind of catching on to, this feeling of like nostalgia. Like it felt a little bit like Disney World, right? Like it's like, you know, your parents taking your kids to Disney World. You are having a good time. You also wouldn't choose to do it without your kids, probably, you know. But like, I wonder if just that regression to a little bit of childhood whimsy and delight is somehow permeating people who may not have been in on it before.
Good stuff. Julia, we have to stop here, but I did want to give you a chance just to tell us a little bit more about Raising Hell Events. You said you do a, you know, adult, I'm sorry, not adult, event consultation. You help people, you know, activate their stores and their bars and their restaurants in a ways that maybe the people who are actually running the bars and stores and restaurants, it's difficult for them to do. And that's where you step in. Tell us about that part of your business.
Yeah, Raising Hell, I often do events. It works a couple different ways. I do events where I kind of ideate and come up with a concept and kind of use my creative brain to produce my own ideas. Or, you know, a bar or venue will bring me in to think about creative programming that will work for their business. I've done some private event planning, but really the creative, if you're looking for creative programming, I think that's where Raising Hell really shines. I don't like to do stuff that anybody else has done. You know, like I did a lot more than just the friendship bracelet stations. It means something to me to create a special experience. So really experiential events and activations, and often with a pop culture bent or some kind of like niche interest, really lights me up. Yeah.
Word. You can find Julia and Raising Hell Events, Raising Hell Events on Instagram. Anything else you want us to hear before we let you go, Julia?
No, thank y'all so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. There goes Julia, and thank you so much for that. When we come back, we'll get to some of your texts and phone calls. I see Gregory and Metairie is here. He wants to talk about the Taylor Swift effect. Can't wait to hear that. There's room for you, too. It's 504-260-1870. Again, I would really love to hear from men who went to the concert. I would really love to hear from kids, teenagers who went to the concert. Get them lined up. I'll try and get them in and out of here as quickly as possible. That's 504-260-1870. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right back after this.